to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Let us pray. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed by thy name.
An alpha female, the way I define it is a go-getter, very task-oriented. While it can be advantageous in certain areas, and certainly in a marriage and when it comes to love and men, it is not a good thing at all.
I know some prophets who literally have a prophetic batting average worse than a National League bullpen pitcher right now.
The good news of Scripture is that we can come to God with the multitude of our sinful desires and behavior in repentance, knowing that the condemnation for those sins has been taken upon Christ on the cross.
Confessional Lutheran Missionary Campus Pastors, Love, Issues, Etc.
I could not tell you who the education secretary was during the Obama administration, but somehow, in a short time, in just weeks since President Obama has taken office, his education secretary, Betsy DeVos, has become a household word. Now, this afternoon, Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, is threatening to knock her name off the top of the list of people that in the Trump administration that people are generally outraged about. But why is it that Betsy DeVos, even making rather tame statements about historically black colleges, garners such reaction and such attention? We're going to be talking about recent statements by Education Secretary Betsy DeVos about black colleges. Joy Pullman will be our guest from The Federalist. A little bit later in this hour of Issues, Etc., we'll talk radical Lutheranism. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest. He made a presentation at a recent Steadfast Lutherans conference titled The Grace of Justification Versus the Grace of Self-Justification. Joy Pullman is a regular guest. She's joining us to talk about recent comments made by Education Secretary Betsy DeVos about black colleges. She's managing editor of The Federalist and author of a recent column titled Everything Betsy DeVos Said About Historically Black Colleges Was Correct. Joy, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
She recently issued a statement, and it seemed like a pretty vanilla statement made in conjunction with President Trump meeting with the leaders of historically black colleges in the Oval Office. And but gauging the reaction to her statement, one would think that Betsy DeVos was calling for a complete resegregation of the entire American educational system. What did she say?
Yeah, Betsy DeVos is a really, your word vanilla is a good one to describe her. She's a completely conventional Republican type of person. And so she put out, after meeting with leaders of historically black colleges and universities, she put out a press release with a very simple statement, basically connecting, those sorts of institutions with being a shining example of school choice. What happens, you know, when individuals get together to solve a real problem rather than, trying to get government to do it for them? Obviously, that wasn't working during segregation. Government was oppressing them. So she just basically made, two-paragraph statement to that effect. And it's basically, she has been called a racist before, but she's been called a racist again for a number of leaders of different organizations, including one coalition of more than 200 kind of leftist activist groups, reacted with outrage, saying that she, is stomping all over history. She needs to get educated, such rude and, all kinds of, just really outsized reactions to, again, a completely, benign Republican typical statement.
But you say the real issue here is not any statement she may or may not have made, but that if President Trump does what he has promised to do with respect to education, it's going to threaten a political monopoly that heretofore is held largely by the Democratic Party. What are you talking about?
I actually think so. The reaction is less important to me than what it signifies, like you mentioned. And what it really signifies here is that for a very long time, Democrat politicians have been extremely out of step with the minority voters that tend to vote for them, especially on the issue of school choice, but on a number of issues. So, but it's obvious, much more obvious in school choice because, you know, American education is largely run by zip code. So poor families have less, fewer opportunities to move into a better school district. They can't afford the rent. They can't afford the mortgage. And so they're clustered in neighborhoods, you know, that tend to have poor schools. And so Democrats, even though those are people who keep voting Democrats back into office, they reject these needs of their constituents for better schools because they get more political power from a smaller number of unions, teachers' unions, that are more comfortable with the system the way that it is, even though it's not serving black kids.
So let's talk about the purpose for which we would have a educational or a secretary of education, a department of education in the first place. Is it necessary if it were doing what it was supposed to do? What would it provide for America's children by way of education?
Oh, that's a really great question. And again, this is another reason why Betsy DeVos is, as I say, kind of a conventional GOP politician, because Republicans have historically tended to, how do you say it, they're what my professors at Hillsdale College will call it, managerial progressive. So rather than actually wanting to let people handle their own affairs, you know, and solve most of their own problems, which we're better suited to do, I think. A lot of Republicans say, well, we'll just do a better job of centrally managing your problems for you than Democrats will do. So in that tradition, the Trump administration seems to be kind of playing with this idea of saying that, you know, public schools should be kind of run from Washington. So in that vein, you know, what they're kind of offering is they're talking about school choice vouchers programs where the federal government, you know, would be directly offering money to kids to take to various schools. And that would theoretically help these kids get out of those bad schools, go to better schools. So actually what I think would be a more effective way is if you look at the history of the U.S. Department of Education, one of its stated goals was improving education for American minority poor kids. And it hasn't moved the needle one inch towards those goals by any measurable data that we have there. It's just spent billions of dollars. And, you know, America's kids, especially the neediest ones, aren't doing particularly better because of their efforts. So all of that to say, the Trump administration would like to do a lot. You know, it's talking a lot about this issue, but I think the most that it can really do to help effectively help these kids is by, you know, doing what Betsy DeVos has already been doing in office, raising the profile of this issue and putting pressure on states to do the hard work at the state and local level of actually addressing the needs of these kids. It's not really an effective federal responsibility. There's not much they're going to do that's going to be better than what their parents, their communities can do for them.
Talk about the role of teachers' unions in this.
Well, yeah, that's actually a really interesting bit of history that I get into in the article, because Democrats have a really long history of actually, there's a lot of progressive support for school vouchers going back decades, if not, you know, over the past century. And so, but as teacher unions became a source of major political power in the country, they used to play it more down the middle part of the last century. But right around President Jimmy Carter coming to office, they gradually became more and more kind of organizing centers for Democrats, fundraisers. And they do it in a very closed manner because in, I think, almost half of the states, if you want to be a public school teacher, you must join a union. You don't have a choice about whether you think they're doing a good job on your behalf, and so you choose to support them with your money. So because of that, teachers' unions get a dedicated fund, you know, from people who don't have any choice about whether to support them. And so they typically use all of that money and direct it back into Democratic politics. So I think that teachers' unions are on the way out as a system of political power. They've been losing a lot over the past decade or two, but that doesn't mean that they, you know, are gone yet, and they still have a lot of power, especially within the Democratic coalition.
What is their objection, or what is, generally speaking, teachers' unions' objections to vouchers and things like that? You say they erased it from Jimmy Carter's platform, mm-hmm, effectively before he got elected.
Well, basically, I think their objection to it is that they don't control it, right? Because Al Shanker was one of the former presidents of the American Federation of Teachers, one of the big teacher unions. He supported vouchers a couple of decades ago because he expected to be able to have his union control them. So teachers' unions are basically for and against policies as they have the ability to control or direct them in education. So they're all about serving their own interests, which I think more voters and parents ought to be thinking more strategically that way and thinking about what serves their own interests. So what teachers' unions, I don't actually think that they would always be against vouchers if vouchers and when they become a lot more spread. Basically, where the money goes, teacher unions are going to follow. So as soon as vouchers get bigger, I think unions are going to see them, rather than trying to get rid of them, trying to co-opt them and harness that spending and direct it towards themselves again.
On the subject, since the, you know, this is occasioned by a conversation on historically black colleges and universities, what do we know African-American citizens, what do they think about the hot button issues of education?
Well, yeah, I cite a couple of poll results, and these are just, I've been following, you know, education polling for almost a decade now, and it's really consistent that we see 2/3 to 3/4 of African Americans and Latinos both supporting various school choice measures, such as charter schools. There, I think it's 75% among black Americans in the latest poll. It's about similar numbers for Hispanics. And school voucher mechanisms, there's a number of different ways to kind of run the money on school choice programs, but you see a very consistent majority of African Americans supporting those kinds of programs. And you also see a lot higher dissatisfaction within the African American community about the quality of the schools that their kids are able to access, a lot more concerns about where American education is heading, and a very large numbers of them, in fact, a plurality, something around the 40%, wish that they could send their kids to a private school, but you know, very few families like theirs have the ability to pay the tuition themselves.
You actually, we've been using the term school choice, but you actually prefer a different term, parent choice. Why?
Because I think it's really important. I think a lot, as the school choice issue has gotten really popular, and I think with Betsy DeVos becoming education secretary, it's now very clearly mainstream. So that said, because it's very popular with parents, people, politicians want to use the popularity, you know, to translate into support for themselves. And that does, but they don't always, you know, politicians, they don't always deliver on their promises. What they want to do is pretend they're going to deliver on their promises, get all the good feels out of the promise, and then not make the hard, you know, push of actually delivering on their promises. So I have been seeing that happen with school choice, and I'm expecting that to continue, where politicians will define it basically in terms of, you know, it turns into whatever the politician wants it to mean. So that's why I like to use parent choice, because it very carefully brings it down to the individual and the family level and reflects what I think is the truth, that parents are the ones who should and do have the right and the best interests of their child at heart, to say the way that their child should be educated most broadly. So I think you have two options when deciding basically who should be the locus of power in education. You can choose government or you can choose parents. And so I vote with parents because they're closest to the kids. They're the ones who are most likely to care about the individual needs of their own personal distinct children.
Finally, there's no doubt about it that President Trump ran with one of the major promises made to eliminate Common Core. He wasn't always completely accurate in what he wanted to do about it, but he did mention Common Core all the time in a critical way. There are some speculating, and Breitbart has recently quoted Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard speculating that since the word Common Core seems to have fallen out of President Trump's vocabulary, maybe he's waffling on that campaign promise. What are your thoughts?
I'm not really, I think that is a fair argument to advance, but I think that right now the president has a lot bigger fish to fry, frankly, and that's probably the real reason that it has dropped off. But it's really hard for me to tell how well the president understands the education issue. Some of the appointments that he's made in that regard, and as well as the staff moving into the education department, you know, don't telegraph that he really gets it in a way that he gets some of the other issues that Americans have long been unheard about, like Common Core. I know, obviously, it's very clear that he knows that Americans are mad about it, but it's not clear that he knows and will put political capital behind actually addressing the root of the Common Core problem, which is the size of the federal government, the power of the federal government to tell, you know, to micromanage from 2,000 miles away. So I don't expect him to be moving on that initially, which is unfortunate, but honestly, I don't know. I mean, he's got a lot going on right now, and his first priority as president is our national security, is our defense, and then moving on to the economy. So Common Core is something that he ought to have hired good staff to handle while he's tackling bigger issues. I'm not sure that's really happening.
Well, in that vein, do we have any idea where Betsy DeVos stands on that?
Well, we've talked about this before. It's really hard to kind of read the tea leaves of what Betsy DeVos thinks is going to do on Common Core, because she said contradictory statements. She has reiterated the president's promise to not reinforce Common Core, but she also has just recently said in an interview that she supports the federal government telling states what their curriculum and testing needs to be. So I'm not really seeing clear signals from her office yet showing that she is going to execute faithfully on President Trump's promise in this regard.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist and author of a recent column there titled Everything Betsy DeVos Said About Historically Black Colleges Was Correct. You'll find a link to it under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Joy, thank you.
Thanks.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. He ordinarily joins us to do our series, Christ in the Old Testament, but he has come out of hiding momentarily to engage us in a conversation on radical Lutheranism. Now, that might sound like a good thing, radical Lutheranism going back to the root. The problem is that radical Lutheranism, while claiming to go back to the root, going back to the roots of Lutheran theology, actually missed the mark rather widely. Went back to Luther rather than to the Lutheran confessions. We'll talk about radical Lutheranism today with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer on the other side of the break, live this Thursday afternoon, March the 2nd. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
St. Jacobi Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Wisconsin has a special guest each and every week. It isn't you, but it is Jesus Christ. He is a guest, and he is also the one who comes to serve you with his preached word and his broken body and shed blood. You are invited to be served by Jesus on Saturday evening at 6:30 and Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Visit www.stjakobi.org for more information.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Law and Gospel, the Reformation solas, the theology of the cross, the means of grace, simultaneously saint and sinner. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity. It's written by regular guest Dr. Al Schmidt. Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity is published by Concordia Publishing House. 1-800-325-3040 or read an excerpt at issuesetc.org. Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, CPSprep.com.